Hello and welcome to Off Curve. I am Wicked Good and I am talking to you about Hearthstone as I drive home from work. It is Tuesday, October 9th, 2018 as I am recording this. Actually driving all the way home from work today, not just from the train station. But it's kind of a good thing because we got a lot to talk about this week. This Vicious Syndicate released a new article that's been making the rounds, and I think it's worth discussing in some detail because I've got some thoughts on it, both from, you know, a Hearthstone perspective, also from a data architect perspective. But we'll get there. We have plenty of time. As far as ladder is concerned, I'm actually feeling pretty good. So I was, you know, doing the same thing. I was struggling at rank 5, and I had decided that I was going to meme around with Cloning Gallery Priest after I got drafted into casting Phoenix Cup again on Saturday. I got to cast with Revopsin, which is always a good time, and we kind of, three of the four players were playing, I guess we'll call it Resurrect Priest now because Phenom actually cut Cloning Gallery from it, so it can't even really call it Cloning Gallery Priest anymore. But so I was playing a lot of that in doing prep for the cast, and then I was enjoying it, so I was playing it some more. But I wasn't getting anywhere. And this is always kind of the thing. Like, I can say that I'm in a meme, but then I'm kind of too much of a tryhard. I'm too much of a tryhard at heart to really commit to that. So I was on, I had a bit of a longer stream on Sunday unexpectedly because my daughters all spontaneously had play dates at our house at the same time. And I told my wife that I was going to hide in my office where I stream from because otherwise the noise was going to drive me up a wall. She's like, fine. I said, well, you know what? I may stream while I'm doing that. She's like, go ahead. So that's what I did. So I was playing some Cloning Gallery Priest. That didn't go so well. I tried some Even Paladin. That didn't go so well. And then I switched over to Death Rattle Hunter. Schwal, friend of the show, happened to be in the chat, and he's gotten to Legend with that deck, and he was able to coach me through some of the mulligan decisions I was making wrong, apparently. And, you know, so I was able to get myself out of rank 5 with it on stream. This is Baby Bear's list that I was playing on stream. I've since cut one mind control tech for Azilliax, which is probably kind of just landing on another consensus list. But in any event, I'm going to give her the credit because that's where I took the initial list from. And I was playing that a lot again yesterday off stream, and I got myself up pretty deep into rank 3. I lost a couple games today at lunch, but still feeling pretty good about it. So I kind of feel like maybe I'm getting my groove back. Like, part of it is that I need to understand the deck well enough to play it, and part of it is that I could feel myself kind of focusing in on the games and thinking through the turns more than I had been with some of the other decks. And you know, even when I was seeing weird stuff, I was still kind of thinking through, like, what they might be trying to do. And so that's felt pretty good. I mean, I can feel the meta shifting a little bit away from it, and we'll see. But I always jinx myself when I do this, right? Like, I say that I'm going to stick with a deck, and then inevitably something happens and I don't. But I'm going to do my best to try to stick with this because I feel like it's, you've got a puncher's chance in any matchup. Like, and this is going to be kind of the bulk of what we're going to be talking about today. But it feels like even in the bad matchups, you're not super unfavored. And sometimes you can just kind of get a win out of nowhere if you get the right opener. So I'm going to stick with it as much as I can and see if I can do something with it. I've also been kind of figuring out that what I need to do is I need to not play standard while I'm at work without, you know, full concentration, so I can start, you know, spending that time playing around in wild a little bit. So that's what I've been trying to do. So I'm trying to get myself back into good habits. I think I'm getting there. I mean, I did take to heart what I was talking about on the show last week. So it's been kind of working out. And, you know, there's always going to be something that's going to happen where I'm not necessarily going to climb as fast as I would like. Because if I'm going to be casting, then I need to be comfortable with the decks. And, you know, if there are decks that I'm not super familiar with, I need to spend time with them, which sometimes may mean tanking my rank in the process. But I don't think I'm casting anything that I need to prep for at least 2 weeks. So I should be able to stick with this at least for the time being and see if I can kind of get myself there. If I can get closer to Legend, I might do a deck guide on it. Either on the show or in writing. I don't know about writing, because it doesn't seem like those get very well received, though. If that is something you want, then let me know. If I hear enough people, I might do it anyway. It's just, you know, those things take a lot of time to write. And sometimes it's, you know, I don't know what the reaction is to it. But anyway, the long and the short of it is that, you know, I've been pretty down the last couple weeks, and I feel like I might be turning it around. Like, even if I'm not, like, immediately going to shoot up to Legend, like, I feel like the last couple days have been a good progress, both in terms of my in-game decision-making as well as just staving off tilt and knowing when to, you know, when to call it a night when I'm either tired or tilted. So, you know, we'll see. I'm hopeful. Hopefully this time next week I'll have some better news, but this is where I am for right now. So one other thing that I just want to touch on before we get into the meat of the discussion today. It was revealed this morning. Sorry, I'm trying to get into a rotary and it's not going well. Okay, there we go. I promise I'm not going to crash. And I promise if I do crash, you're not going to hear that. But it came out today that Cream Puff has decided that he was going to end Top Deck Kings. And you know, I completely understand not continuing to do a show when your interests are, or your motivation have kind of fallen off to the side, or you feel like you're not able to contribute more to the discussion. Like, I've had to step away from Disruption when I felt that way too. And, you know, there is such a thing as overcommitting to projects, and you want to make sure you're spending your time wisely. So, you know, absolutely, you know, no shame in that. And, you know, just want to thank Cream Puff for everything that he's done for the community. And specifically in terms of this show, because Cream Puff was just switching over to a solo format around the time that I was launching off Curve. And, you know, he's pretty instrumental in driving listeners to the show when it was early. Not that, you know, there were a few groups that were, but, you know, he in particular had made a point to call out the show a few times early on. And, you know, honestly, I'm going to miss his analysis. Like, you know, he had a really good and thorough way of breaking things down that is something that I can't really do on the show, because I'm kind of doing this off the top of my head while I'm driving. I don't really have, like, a lot of notes in front of me to do something really as detailed as some of the detailed deck guides, audio deck guides that he would do. But I do definitely understand, like, how hard it is to do a solo podcast. It's really, as far as I'm aware, is just this show and Blister Guys Walk to Work that are the solo casts in the space that are going to be left after that. And it's a lot of work, and it takes, you know, prep that you can't really, like the thing with most podcasts is that you have kind of, ideally, when it's working properly, you have kind of a shared burden in terms of show prep and in terms of, you know, getting the show out and promotion and all the things that go along with doing a podcast. And when you're doing a solo show, you're a one-man band, one-person band. So it's, you know, it takes a lot of motivation, a lot of energy. And I'll be honest, there are weeks that I don't know what to talk about. And I'm grateful that I have, you know, generally get a couple of questions in when those weeks come up so that I can still be adding something to the conversation. But it does take a lot of work to kind of figure out what you're going to talk about from week to week when there isn't a lot of news, or you're not really getting, you know, having something to contribute, like in terms of, you know, getting a new deck to Legend and helping people learn about it or whatever. So it's, you know, I just want to, you know, I understand that plight. I appreciate everything that Cream Puff has brought to the community. And, you know, I'm hoping that we're going to hear from him again in the Hearthstone space. And, you know, I'll just say, Cream Puff, if you do get the itch, you know, I'll edit for you. So we can do a show if you want to come on, if you get the itch and you want to talk about Hearthstone again. But anyway, and if you are happen to, because he did call me out specifically on his farewell episode too. So if you are a new listener to Off Curve coming from Top Deck Kings, welcome. I hope that I will do Cream Puff proud and, you know, carrying the torch in a way, because I feel like we were kind of, you know, kind of brother sibling shows in a way. So, I won't say that I'm doing as well as what he was doing, but, you know, I try. So hopefully I can kind of give you a little bit of what you're missing from him and be a poor man's cream puff, as it were. But anyway, Cream Puff, thank you for, you know, everything you've done for the community. Thank you for what you've done for Off Curve. And I hope that, you know, you are happily transitioning to married life and starting off the new show. And I hope that that brings you all the happiness in the world. Okay, so let's talk about this Vicious Syndicate report and what it means and some of the reactions to it. Because there's a lot that happened yesterday. And I kind of thought about recording this yesterday, and then I decided that I wanted to give it a day and kind of let things settle. Also give myself a chance to kind of digest it a little bit more. So the piece is entitled Meta Polarity and Its Impact on Hearthstone. You can find it at viciouscyndicate.com. And the general gist of it is kind of what I've been talking about on the show for the last several weeks, is they decided to quantify how polarized this meta actually is. So one of the things I've been talking about on the show for the last several weeks is that it felt like a lot more of the matchups were one-sided, and as a result, it felt like a lot was coming down to what deck you queued as opposed to how well you queued it in some instances, in enough instances where it was starting to feel that way. That is not to say that you can play poorly and just win because you queue the right deck. It's not to say that in all cases when you're playing one of those unfavored matchups, it's just an auto loss. But it felt like there were more of those where you were kind of playing out a game even though both of you knew how it was going to end from very early on. So what they did was they tried to quantify that. So they took a number of different metas. I'm presuming they took the last meta report from each one of those metas before rotation. And then they took all of the matchups for each one of the decks in the meta, weighted by popularity, and then came up with kind of an aggregate matchup spread. So for instance, if, you know, on average, if you were, you know, like, they would average out to like a 55-45 spread. So they would subtract the two, and that's your polarity score. So a 55-45 spread would be like 10. And 10 or 10%, I guess we call it 10% because it just sounds better. Polarity is kind of what you want, right? Like, that's kind of the sweet spot where you're going to have an unfavored matchup, but it's winnable. Like, a lot of the matchups that we're seeing, and this kind of hit home for me while I was doing prep for Phoenix Cup this weekend, because one of the things that I do when I'm prepping for a tournament like that where, you know, where there are bans and where I'm trying to do, like, you know, matchup analysis ahead of time, is I'll take, I think some people call it a 4x4, where you take each player's decks and you put, you know, player one along the side, you put player two on the top. I'll put an image of this in the show notes to it at offcurve.com, so you can see the ones that I did for week four of Phoenix Cup. But you put them all side by side, and then you just kind of match, you determine what the matchup win percentage is and who's favored. And what I'll do is if it's more than 55-45, I'll make it a darker color. So I give one color to each player, and then I make it like a light, like, for example, if I have like Phenom in green and Nalgadan in red. So if it's like a 55 or below matchup for Phenom, it'll be a light green. If it's greater than 55, it'll be a dark green, and vice versa. And I noticed when I was doing that, there was a lot of dark on the matchup spreads. There were some mirrors. There were some balanced matchups, you know, slightly unfavored matchups. But for the most part, a lot of it was very heavily tilted in one player's favor or another. So Vicious Syndicate decided to cut to do this. And by the way, we'll talk about what this means, but one thing that I really appreciate about Vicious Syndicate, being somebody who is a data architect who works with data scientists occasionally, not as often as I'd like, but occasionally, is you kind of, the thing with data science, and which is what they're doing, right? It's statistics, it's data science, it's fancy math applied to large sets of data. That's what data science is. One of the things with data science is that when you are a layperson, is you kind of need to have a BS meter for it, because you don't really know. Wait, even if you saw the algorithms, you wouldn't necessarily know what was going into them. And this is a conversation that we've had around HS Replay stats on occasion. This is not the yelling about data episode, but I do need to get Ridiculous Hat on here so we can do the yelling about data episode once and for all, because we've been talking about it forever. But one thing that I really do appreciate about Vicious Syndicate, and the reason that I trust them, not even really seeing what's underneath the covers, but from reading a report like this, is that not only do they explain their methodology, which is incredibly important that you explain the methodology and don't just present a statistic so somebody else who's reading it can understand it and validate that it makes sense to them as well, but they explain it in a way that you don't need to be a data scientist to understand. There are no fancy math symbols. There are no sigma notations or anything like that. They explain it in plain English. And as somebody who is not a data scientist, but who often has to evaluate if data scientists are BSing me or not, I really appreciate that. And that's kind of what I look for in a data scientist presenting findings, is that if the methodology behind it is sound, you should be able to explain what you're doing in reasonably plain English to somebody who does not know statistics or math or anything like that beyond, you know, what one would normally assume would be a standard level for somebody who's consuming it. So I really do appreciate that, and I think the methodology makes sense. They even talked about an alternate methodology that they used using the square roots of the weighted averages to satisfy the statistician pedants in the audience, and, you know, called out when they were looking at data across all ranks, but the data from, you know, ranks in particular buckets didn't really deviate that much from the overall total. So, you know, in terms of me as somebody who is used to consuming this stuff, I trust the work that they're doing, even though I can't see the underlying data, because it just kind of passes a smell test for me. So I think that's really important when you're evaluating statistics. Again, Hat and I will probably get into this more on the inevitable yelling about data discussions. And this is why I really dislike some of the things that HS Replay has been putting out of late in terms of, you know, statistics that they're putting out or things they're finding from their data sets that may or may not. They don't really talk about their methodology pretty much ever. And they sometimes pull things out that are counterintuitive or are not actually saying what they seem to be saying. Anyway, that was kind of a long aside, but so that's kind of setting up what that is. So let's talk about what does this mean for the meta and what does this mean for the game. So the article goes on and it goes to compare the different metas, and the long story short is that the average polarity you start seeing it spike in the Ungoro meta, and it just keeps kind of going up as each set is released. And you can see that they give you kind of the Whispers of the Old Gods meta, which was a pretty balanced meta, all things considered. And, you know, you see a lot of the most, you know, frequent decks hovering somewhere between like 8 and 10%. It starts going up in Ungoro, and Ungoro post-nerf was actually one of the better metas, I feel like. That's kind of like the meta that we all kind of wistfully remember. And that's kind of all hovering like the 10 to 15%. And it kind of keeps going up and up and up. And then they go to Boomsday, and every deck that's got any sort of frequency associated with it is at least at 15% or higher. And, you know, I think that there's definitely, I mean, we can feel it. And we'll go into the reasons for that in the next segment. But you can definitely feel it. Like, we've all been feeling kind of that in this, you know, in this meta. I feel like there's something to be said for diversity as a function of polarity, though. Because, ultimately, the Karazhan meta was not a meta that anyone would call enjoyable. Unless you really loved mid-range Shaman. Because, and I would imagine that would kind of contribute to the polarity, like, as there are fewer decks in the meta, you're going to see more mirrors. As you see more mirrors, those are going to, by definition, have a zero polarity, and that's going to bring the overall number down. I don't know if that necessarily means that you need to remove mirrors from the calculation. I actually don't think you do, because it's not really showing an accurate representation of what you're expecting to run into on ladder. But there is something to be said for, like, I would expect the Karazhan meta would have a very low polarity because all you did was play bang shamans into shamans all day on the ladder. Is that something we want to go back to? No, I don't think so. And that kind of goes into a little bit of some of the criticisms of the piece, especially from some of the Blizzard developers talking about how polarization can be a good thing. And I'll chime in on that a little bit too, because I think there's a balance here in terms of diversity and polarization. Like, I think that the problem right now is we have so many decks and all of the decks kind of prey on something else. And there's kind of a sweet spot where you have diversity, but the matchups are all kind of in that 10 polarity range, right? Where it's like a 55-45 matchup feels fair. Like, yes, one player should be... You don't want all mirrors, right? Like, all mirrors is not fun either, because then a lot of the time it just kind of comes down to who draws better sometimes. And that's not good either. You kind of want a balance. And that's the one thing I want to really caution when you're reading this report is that... And you know, that was one criticism, and they've responded to that, and they've said that, you know, nobody wants zero polarization. Like, that's not fun either. But you do need to keep in mind that just the message you shouldn't take out of this is polarization is bad, because it's not. But you do need to have a balance between diversity and polarization, and the polarization needs to not get to the extremes. Because once you start getting into, you know, kind of the 80-20 or even like the 70-30 range, then you get to the point where it feels like your decision in the game didn't matter. It just matters, like, the deck that you chose to bring kind of made the decision, and you're like, it's not a rock, paper, scissors meta. You're literally playing rock, paper, scissors. And that's not a lot of fun, right? So there's definitely a balance there between polarization and, you know, and diversity and fun. Like, there's a continuum there. The other kind of quibble I would have with the way that they presented the data is they showed it all in tables and sorted by frequency, by polarity and not by frequency, or not giving you an option to sort it by frequency. I actually would have loved to see it as a scatter plot, because that would have actually visualized how the meta was shaping up, where you could see how the most frequent decks were in terms of polarity and kind of see where those clusters were. I feel like that might have been a little bit another way that you could kind of show this and have it speak to people, because it shows the list, especially when you're looking at something like the Old Gods meta. You see kind of like Yogg-Hunter at the top, and Yogg-Hunter was the original 35% of the time it works every time deck, and that wasn't really like a function of like a component of the meta, especially it didn't even come in until late. And you're not really seeing how the most frequent decks were in terms of polarization. So I would like to see that maybe visualized a little bit differently. I don't really like walls of text to begin with, because I am a data visualization nerd. I like to see things in charts and then be able to drill into the details. But I mean, overall, the theory is sound, right? Like, it's definitely, it may not be the only thing, but it's definitely something that we've been feeling. And if you could just kind of gut check it against what you felt in like the last few metas, that, you know, are you going to be able to climb with any sort of a deck or you know, most viable decks, and have a reasonable time doing it? And I think that's, again, goes back to some of the frustration that a lot of us have been feeling, where, you know, grinding to legend is a time investment. A lot of the matches are lopsided, but not so much that you feel like you should just auto concede. And, you know, spending 20, 30 minutes on a match, especially when, you know, Odd Warrior is a thing, and then losing it feels bad. And that takes away a lot of the time you would have spent to get to legend. This is what I kind of talked about when I started this whole series on, you know, how this meta feels. And, you know, it's not always Odd Warrior, and the average game time may not be going up. But, you know, when you lose one of those really long matches and it turns out you're not... you're unfavored, but it's not so bad that you're just going to, you feel like you need to stick it out anyway, that cuts a lot of time out of your available time to grind. So I think that there's definitely something to that, and the the decks, it definitely feels like if you can find something that's, you know, feels good across the board, you're okay, but there aren't very many of those decks right now. And that's why, you know, even the report is touting, like, Token Druid and even Warlock, because those, and it's not even that those have good matchups against everything, it just happens to be able to create burst against some things that just isn't answerable, right? So even the ones that have a good spread against the field aren't really that way because they just aren't feel fair. It's just that they can burst out some of these other burst decks before they can burst them back. So the finally, the, you know, if you're going to present the finding like this, you're obviously going to ask, well, why is this? And the theory that the Vicious Syndicate folks put out is that we've been getting these cycles of cards in the last few sets that have really been contributing to polarization. They started with the quests, and each one of those quests is really, it's effectively, it's going to be very polarized against any sort of a deck that either is slower or doesn't, you know, isn't able to get through their defenses quickly. You know, if you think about the Quest Rogue's the obvious example, they bring up, you know, Mage and Warrior and even Priest as decks that can just, you know, snowball, and there's really nothing you can do about it. The Death Knights obviously are contributing to it. The mana cheating in the recruit mechanic is contributing to it. And then Genenbaku is where they saw the huge spike in the Witchwood, because, you know, it's contributing so much additional value over the course of the game from those upgraded hero powers, or creating additional tempo in the case of the even ones, that it's very hard for another deck. They describe it as Feast or Famine, and I think it really is. Like, you know, Odd Warrior, if it's going to beat any deck that's going to try to kill it through damage for the most part. But anything that has an alternate win condition that doesn't involve killing them with damage, it's going to lose to. You think about Togwoggle Druid, you think about, I mean, that's really the best example, or Mechathune, any of the Mechathune decks, that sort of thing. Like, when I was trying to play Odd Warrior to Legend, I felt that a lot. I didn't get to Legend because I would keep running into something like a Questrunk or a Mechathune deck or a big spell mage that just had inevitability through the Jaina hero power. And a lot of that infinite value and inevitability is a lot of what the slower decks feel like. Like, control decks sometimes were that way, but not always. And you would kind of get run out of resources, but it wouldn't be because you just had a hero power that you could just keep pressing. Like, the fact that Hunter can outlast Odd Warrior is kind of a testament to this, where you have a button you can press that can just keep continually presenting more and more value, and a lot of times it comes down to what are you offered. And that feels bad too, right? Because, like, if you get offered a bunch of whatever it is, Raptor Hatchlings, whatever it's called, that shuffles the 4/3 into your deck, and you get a bunch of Lifesteal, and you get some Poisonous, you get a Cave Hydra with Poisonous, or a Bloatbat with Poisonous to get through a board. Like, yeah, you picked that. Yeah, you deployed it properly, but there's a lot of things that are going on in the background beyond just, like, the normal RNG involved with the card game that's contributing to that result. That's out of your hands as a player. And that's what kind of feels bad about that, right? Like, even when you win, you don't always feel great about that kind of match. Now, I would argue, they do point out that it's these cards and it's also the lack of counterplay. I feel like there's one thing that the Vicious Syndicate report really didn't touch on that is really important when you're thinking about these things. And I think it's the size of the card pool. So, everything that they're talking about, with the exception of the Death Knights, is a card that is a build-around card. A card that you specifically build your deck, and you sometimes are building with restrictions to take advantage of a power spike later in the game. You think about Quest Rogue, where everything is like a one-drop or a two-drop, and that you're just kind of hoping to get through that early game so you can finish your quest. You have to put so many taunts into a taunt warrior that you just kind of need to figure out, how am I going to play these taunts and still not die? You know, like a quest mage was really just draw and then getting you to your win condition and just not dying, right? And it revolves around that. Genenbaku are obvious deck building restrictions. Even Kel'Seth in Frozen Throne is another one that they didn't really bring up, but that's also, I mean, it's more swingy, so it doesn't show up in the polarity numbers as much. But at the same time, like, you're getting a huge power spike in exchange for a deck building restriction. And I think that the problem that we're having right now revolves around the fact that that Team 5's design philosophy has kind of revolved around building these deck building restriction challenges in order to provide variety. You know, you see, Spell Hunter is another one in Kobolds and Catacombs, where you have Rock Dalar on To My Side if you don't include any minions in your deck. You get that with Taunt Druid, where, you know, any of the recruit mechanics really are kind of deck building challenges in disguise. Same thing with Spiteful Summoner, right? Like, you can think of a lot of them where you have to build your deck a certain way and you can't include certain cards in order to take advantage of this huge power spike somewhere in the mid to late game. And the problem with this approach is that we have so many cards, especially once you get into, like, the last set in a yearly rotation, that the challenges really aren't that challenging anymore. Like, you think about, like, Tempo Rogue and trying to, you know, get value out of Kel'Seth. Like, Kel'Seth's in Death Rattle Hunter just because you don't have any 2-drops, so why not? Right? It's in Shudderwalk Shaman, even though it really has no place there. But it's just like, well, I don't have any better 2-drops, so let's put it in there. We were just talking about Kel'Seth on the show last week, whether you should craft it or not, because, like, the challenges aren't that challenging. Like, it's not hard to put together an odd warrior or an odd rogue or an odd paladin or even shaman is a little bit more difficult, but, like, even warlock is another one. Like, there's an odd druid out there. Kibler put together an odd druid. He says he's getting a 70% win rate. Granted, he's Kibler, but I was in Ryzen's stream yesterday, and he actually ran up against Kibler, and the deck is strong. I don't understand why, but it's strong. And it's like, and Druid really should not be one that's benefiting from a hero power upgrade, because the hero power upgrade for Druid is not great. So, but the fact of the matter is that it's not hard to put together a deck that works around those deck building restrictions, because there are so many cards in the format. So you get you get Tempo Kel'Seth Rogues, and you get Quest Rogue being a thing despite having been nerfed 3 times, because there are so many cards in the format. And I don't think that I think that this is kind of where I've been trying to place why I feel like there are too many cards in the format, and I think this is why, because there are so many decks that are revolving around deck building restrictions, that there are enough cards in the format that it's not really a restriction. Like, if you think about what Reno / Kazakus decks were after the set after Mean Streets of Gadgetzan, after that rotation, like, Kazakus decks went away for a good set. And then, I mean, granted, you had Raza the Chained, and Anduin that made Raza Priest what it is, but, like, you could have played a Reno Mage or a Reno Lock, sans Reno, like a Kazakus Mage or a Kazakus Warlock, but you didn't, because the power spike wasn't necessarily worth it, but also, like, there just weren't enough cards to really make it work. I remember trying to summon the Unguro meta, it just didn't really work all that well. But suddenly you get into Knights of the Frozen Throne, and yeah, it's not perfect, but you could do it. There were people who built Reno Mage, there were people who built Kazakus Mage, there were people who built Kazakus Warlock. It happened even more when you got into Kobolds and Catacombs. So I think that one of the things that Team 5, and you know, if we're talking about feedback for Team 5, I think one of the things they really need to look at is the rotation schedule. And I think that we're starting to get to a point where if deck building challenges are going to be a thing, that we really need to consider rotating one in, one out. Like, there needs to be a maximum number of cards, because you get a whole bunch of other problems in terms of power creep, in terms of cards like Giggling Inventor having to get printed in order to be making an impact, in terms of stuff feeling the same because, you know, decks really aren't changing because you're just kind of cherry-picking the powerful cards and putting them into the existing decks that have been around. There's a lot of things that are going from not having a one-in, one-out rotation. Having a fresh meta every 3 months and taking, like, more than, like, a week to solve a meta after a new set comes out might also cure some of the malaise that we're feeling right now in terms of, well, we didn't get a balance patch, and so we're stuck with this meta for another 2 months. Whether or not you feel that way, there is a large percentage of the community that feels that way. And, you know, that is also because just the decks aren't changing. Because you're never going to change the decks that are in the meta significantly by adding cards. You're really only going to change them by removing cards and making people find new strategies. I mean, you see that in Wild, too. Like, I mean, not that Wild never changes, but it doesn't change as quickly as you would like because you're never taking anything away. So I think that that's something that's kind of been a topic of discussion in some, you know, when we get to these problematic metas. And I think it really needs to be reopened in terms of why is the meta feeling stale? And why do these sets not feel like they have the impact that they should, especially the second and third set of the year? And why are we getting so much power? I think that really we just have too many cards. And we need to, or if we're going to have a rotation like this, then maybe we need two formats, one where we do one in, one out, and one where you have, you know, a full year or something like that. Maybe that's too confusing. I don't know. But I really think that the card pool is the culprit. And I think it's something that not enough people are talking about. And I think that maybe that's something that we need to make more of a discussion in the community. Whether the standard rotation, we've had it for 3 years now, whether the standard rotation is really doing enough, or whether we need to try something different in terms of how cards rotate in and out of standard. Okay, so that's a lot. Anyway, so that's really all I got, because I'm actually almost home now, so... And I know this is going to be a longer episode than normal, but I feel like I kind of had a lot to say, and I actually have more to say than I thought I did on this topic, so there you go. But I really do, you know, let's continue the conversation. I'd love to, continue this conversation. Maybe we pick this up again next week if there's more to talk about. I do have a couple other things I want to talk about next week, but we might end up coming back to this again if it kind of pops up again. Anyway, thank you as always for listening. I talked about Cream Puff earlier in the show. It's tough out there as a solo podcaster. I mean, not that I necessarily have any trouble talking for extended amounts of time, but, you know, it is tough out there for a solo podcaster. I really do appreciate everyone who is sticking with me and everybody who is, you know, telling, saying nice things about the podcast and recommending it to other people. It really does help a lot. And, you know, especially when I'm doing this as a one-man band, it really does make a difference. So, as always, you can find all the show notes and the links. I'll try to remember to put a link to Kibler's Odd Druid out there too on the show notes, so you can see it, because it's something. But you can find all the links at offcurve.com. You can go to @offcurve on Twitter if you just want announcements when new show content is live. You can also follow my personal account, which is @wickedgood on Twitter, and that's going to have all of that plus other stuff, like when I am streaming or when I'm casting something, or, you know, when there's a good indie game that you should go buy, anything like that. You can all find that all on my Twitter. You can also find me streaming on Twitch. I am WickedGoodFM. I stream for a good 3 hours on Sunday. I'm hoping to do that a little bit more, maybe do it a little bit earlier. I'm trying to see how the schedule works, but I do really appreciate everybody coming to the stream and hanging out when I do stream. You can also see me casting out and about. I usually announce those on Twitter when I'm doing that. And please do leave a review on iTunes. It's one other way that you can really help support and help get the word out about the show. And you know, words of encouragement mean a lot. Words of encouragement in a venue that can also help other people find the show helps a little more. So that's my guilt trip for you today. But that's it for me for this week. Hopefully I'll have some good news vis-a-vis my ladder climb next week. Thank you again, you know, and I've said it a couple times, but thank you for, you know, spending your podcast listening time with me. I know you have a lot of choices for where you can spend, you know, whatever time you have allocated to listen to podcasts, whether they be Hearthstone or otherwise. And I really do appreciate you spending your time with me on my drive home from work. So thank you for that. I will see you next time. And until then, good luck with you with whatever your goals are in and out of the game. I hope you get to them. I hope that you you have a good week. And until then, be good to each other. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.